Rich Kimble here, along with Bruce Pratt for Sports Lit 101. And we're pleased to welcome back to the show the host of Only a Game that airs every Saturday on National Public Radio, WBUR in Boston, Bill Littlefield, joining us again. Bill, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Very excited that you're coming to our fine state on Monday. You'll be at Hannaford Hall at the University of Southern Maine, 7 p.m. What will you be doing there?
Well, among other things, I'll be speaking to and interviewing Joan Benoit-Samuelson, and I look forward to that. She's been a friend for a long time. And I'm going to be talking to the pickleball champion as well. And I have just looked up pickleball in order to be completely prepared for the occasion.
Well, pickleball, as you're finding out, is really catching on, particularly here in Maine. My father-in-law has become an aficionado of this game. I've played it a little bit as a teacher, something we do in phys ed classes at school. It really is a wonderful game.
So I understand. Now, is it popular in Maine because Maine is close to Canada? Because Canada's big on pickleball, right?
Yes. There's a proximity to Canada, and general old age is also helpful.
All right. In that case, I suppose I'd better take it up.
Now, I also understand you'll be, is something you've already done, or will you be doing Monday night, meeting the Colby Lumberjack team?
Yes, indeed, or at least two members of it. And I'm looking forward to that as well, because at least one of them is a champion at that event where you run on a log that's spinning in the water. And I've always wondered how people manage to do that.
Well, that I think it's great because you're doing it with Colby after you launched one of Colby's fine alums, Charlotte Wilder, onto greater things after she hosted your show last time. And then we found out she's going to be with SI. We call that the downtown bump, but I think it's the Only a Game bump.
Well, I hope so. I'm sure Only a Game would love to take credit for that, but you probably should speak to Charlotte about how much influence we actually have.
Well, we love the show so much, Bill, and
I
really enjoyed the piece that was on recently about the bull and the matador. Can you talk about that wonderful story about of playing Little League baseball with Donald Trump?
Well, it wasn't exactly Little League. It was a
prep school.
Who had gone to the same military school that Donald Trump attended, and he remembered for us in a kind of a diary piece or journal piece that he had been on the mound pitching batting practice one day, and his teammate, who he at first identified only as Donald, was crowding the plate and digging in. And this kid was pitcher enough to understand that when a batter digs in, there's only one thing to do. You throw inside, move him off the plate, and convince him that that territory belongs to you rather than to him. And he hit Donald in the head. And Donald allegedly, according to this story, shook off the hit and stepped in and dug in again. And the pitcher threw again and hit him in the head again. And this time he went down like a steer and didn't get up right away. And the pitcher was afraid that he'd killed him. Happily, for the pitcher at least, that was not the case. And Donald rose again, and eventually he's identified in the piece as being the current president of the United States.
And I thought it was remarkable that when the pitcher sends the president the copy of this essay, he gets back a form letter thanking you for contacting him,
yeah,
and no mention of what happened.
Yeah, he tried to he contacted a lot of the fellows who had played on that team so many years ago, and although they all remembered that Donald Trump was one of their teammates, he was not able to find somebody who could absolutely recall that that Donald Trump had been hit in the head twice in the same batting practice. He sent the president a letter, and then he got back a form letter saying, "The president is, I'm very happy to have your thoughts," which was a little bizarre, but all right, that's what presidents do, I guess.
Well, I have to say, as a former young erratic pitcher who often didn't know where the ball was going, I identified with that moment when the second pitch was heading toward his head, and he mentioned how he wanted to race the ball to the plate and get there.
He had the momentary thought that maybe he could run to the plate and get there before the pitch and prevent the imminent disaster, but no, didn't happen that way.
One of the great things about your show, Bill, is that you can do the long form piece. Do you see that as something that, that may be coming back in radio, or do you feel like you're one of the last great holdouts? You're the W.C. Hintz of radio.
Well, there is no greater compliment, as far as I'm concerned, than to be called the W.C. Hintz of radio. The program, you know, what a wonderful thing for you to say. I think it is very much at least in tune with what public radio is doing. You get the Moth Radio Hour, and you get various other programs that are recognizing that storytelling is a good way to go. So I don't know whether it's a comeback, something that's coming back beyond the world of public radio, but people certainly seem to be enjoying it within that world, and we've gotten a lot of very positive response to it.
We're talking with Bill Littlefield of NPR's Only a Game. Bill, how would you describe it, if you have one, the mission statement of Only a Game?
Well, at the very beginning of the program 25 years ago, my feeling was that if we had a story that informed people, that was great. If we had a story that made people laugh, that was also great. And if we had a story that did both of those things, I was 100% behind it. Obviously, we have all sorts of different sports that we cover. We're not limited, as some of the big corporate organizations are, to major sports. We pay attention to pickleball, for example, from time to time, and certainly to ultimate frisbee and skillet tossing and underwater rugby, as well as football, baseball, basketball, hockey, and soccer. So we have a huge range. One of my colleagues asked me today if all gambling was a sport. And I said, for our purposes, sure. You got a gambling story? Let's go.
What is the process when someone comes to you with a story idea, or you hear about something out there that sounds to you like it might make a compelling story?
It varies. Frequently, one member of the staff will come in and say, hey, I got an email from a listener who says we can do this or we can do that, and then we talk about it. And if more than one person thinks it's a good idea, we get in touch with whoever suggested it and try to see if there really is a story there. Sometimes it's an anecdote, which doesn't really translate into, as you say, a longer form narrative piece. And if it's a good good anecdote, we steal it and claim that it's ours later on. But quite often, listeners have terrific ideas that turn into stories, and the story that you just referenced is a good example. That came from a listener. So quite often that happens, and I think it's great because to me it's evidence that the people who listen to the program feel like they own it. They feel like they have a part in it, and that's a great feeling to have helped to create.
Bill, since confession is good for the soul, this seems like a good time to tell you that there have been more than a couple occasions where we've heard a guest in a story on Only a Game and reached out to them and had them on with us. Now, we do always give you credit, and the check is probably in the mail.
Probably, yeah. I'll probably get lost with all the other checks. After all, public radio.
I think one of the great things about the show, when you pick people for the three stories, you should know, you pick really intelligent writers and commentators, none of the hot take guys or any of that kind of stuff. What draws you to another, what draws you to those people? How do you find the Charlotte Wilders, the Patrick Rubies, the people like that?
Well, some of them have, we've used as commentators or experts of one kind or another on the show before we transitioned into the format of the three stories you should know. So Patrick, for example, has been on the show lots of times before. But you're right. We are looking for people who are going to avoid the cliche, and we're going to look for people who are maybe going to help us expand our listenership, partly by saying, okay, look, there's lots of women who talk intelligently about sports, and let's find some. There's lots of minority folks who haven't had a chance to, you know, express themselves in other contexts. Let's get them on here. And that does certainly come into it. Although we did go down and do record one episode of Three Stories You Should Know at ESPN down in Connecticut, and we had two of the hotshots from ESPN on that day. So we're not completely opposed to including those guys.
On Monday night down in Portland, you'll also be reading from your latest book, Take Me Out, which is a wonderful collection. I was drawn especially to a couple of your poems. Baseball Cards took me back. That was wonderful. But I believe my favorite is Why It's Easier to Be a Sports Writer Than an Athlete.
Yeah, well, a little confessional there. I'm glad you liked it. I wrote that book over a period of time, and the idea was, as a father of two kids, and my kids are grown up now, but I remember reading to my kids every night, and I was trying to write a book that would appeal to kids, but that the adults would also have some fun with. And I was thinking along the lines of Dr. Seuss or Shel Silverstein and some of the wonderful rhyming stuff that they have written. And the great fun of that was that at one point, very early after the publication of Take Me Out, my book, the publisher called me and he said, "Quick, go to Amazon.com. If you look at bestsellers under poetry, you're right between Dr. Seuss and Shel Silverstein." Wow. And that lasted about 10 minutes until the chart shifted and I went tumbling down the table. But it was great fun to have it. I have a screenshot of it tacked to my desk bulletin board here.
Well, as someone who was late to the parenthood party, I'm very excited to have my copy of the book now. Look forward to reading it to my little guy so that the tradition will continue.
I hope you both get some fun out of it.
And also, I want to thank you because I teach creative writing, and my best poetry students are always people that started with books from Dr. Seuss and Shel Silverstein.
Oh, sure.
And they grew up liking it and were read to and don't have that adult, "I hate poetry" stuff. So you're doing great work for those of us who are teaching them later on.
Good. I'm glad it works out that way.
Well, Bill, have a wonderful time in Maine. Sunday and Monday, you'll be here appearing Monday night at Hannaford Hall at the University of Southern Maine at 7 p.m. And, of course, on Only a Game, Saturday morning, bright and early on WBUR and NPR. Bill Littlefield, thanks so much for visiting with us again.
Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.